time now on WRJN for a sponsored conversation with Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Office in Racine. Attorney Cabranes is here to talk about and answer legal questions. For 20 years, Cabranes Law Office in Racine has specialized in traffic law, including OWIs, immigration, family law, and criminal defense issues. And now John Cabranes is here on WRJN to talk with you, our listeners. In a few moments, we'll be giving you the number if you'd like to call in.
Well, good afternoon. It is the Cabranes Law Hour. It's about 10 minutes after 1 o'clock. Lou Turner hosting today instead of Glenn Klein. We do have John Cabranes ready to go. Now, last week, Attorney Cabranes talked to Deputy DA of Kenosha County, as Democrat Thomas Binger, about his run for Racine County DA. This week, from the Republican side of the aisle, it's Attorney Cabranes welcoming Assistant DA for Racine County, Tricia Hansen. So with that said, we turn it over to Attorney Cabranes. Sir.
Boy, thank you, sir. I just want to correct you that it's not Assistant District Attorney Trish Hansen. It's Deputy District Attorney Trish Hansen.
My apologies.
Well, you know, you just demoted her, so we don't want that.
Off on a good foot.
But yeah, that's true. We had Mr. Binger on last week, and we have Ms. Hansen on this week. In part to respond to some of the statements that Mr. Binger made, and you know, always enjoy having Trish on or anybody who wants to come on and share their position, especially if they're running for elected office, to let the community know exactly where they stand on these things. And you know, I know that there was a controversy that Mr. Binger wanted to spend a lot of time on last week, and you know, I thought it would be fair to let Trish respond. But before I do that, some of you who are out there listening and who are internet literate may have gone to the WRJN page and may have seen a statement by Mr. Binger which indicated that, essentially indicated that he was surprised that, that Trish Hansen had not been on the show last week and that she was somehow ducking him. I would just like to point out to all those who are listening, and if you're listening, Tom, this goes to you too, that I get to invite the people on the show. I didn't invite Trish last week. Part of it was because, you know, I had talked to Assistant Attorney Binger about bringing the two of you together, Trish and Binger, on the same show. And he didn't respond, and I wasn't going to ambush anybody by inviting you on and having him, you know, feel suddenly that he was being ambushed. So that's why Trish Hansen didn't come on last week. It wasn't a question of she's ducking anybody. I've known Trish for 20 years, and I can tell you that that's not in her character. She doesn't duck people. If anything, she's a freight train, not a ducker. If that's cleared up, I will turn this over to and say hello to Assistant District Attorney. Excuse me, I did it now. Deputy District Attorney.
I feel better, thank you.
You should. I'm ashamed.
Also, quickly, we should say if anybody wants to jump in here, we'll take your calls at 634-9756. At 634-9756 or 634-WRJN. Attorney
right.
Cabranes.
Why, thank you. And just to point out this... I have the Cabranes Law Offices in town. You can call me at 262-638-0529. And as the joke, the running joke we've had here for the last several months is operators are standing by.
Yes,
so 262-638-0529. Without any more ado, I'll introduce Deputy District Attorney Trish Hansen, who's running for Racine County District Attorney. Trish, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm happy to have you back, and I'm especially happy to have you back, given all this controversy that's been swirling over the last week and last couple of weeks, actually. And you know, I think it's only fair that you have your opportunity to tell us what happened, because honestly, you know, I had never heard of the Hatch Act before this controversy sprung up. I have had an opportunity to do a little research on the Hatch Act, and it's my belief that not only did you not violate the Hatch Act, but there is no way that you could have violated the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act doesn't apply to you specifically. So I'm not here to make apologies for you. I'm here to let you get your story out and explain what happened, and, you know, if you want to take responsibility for something, this is your opportunity.
Well, thank you. So here's what happened. Back in, it must have been May, when my predecessor decided to announce that he was not going to run for district attorney, there was a press conference so that he could make that announcement. And lots of members, chiefs of law enforcement agencies, were present for that press conference. And it was that day that we announced that I was going to run. And so many photographs were taken. In fact, the photograph that is the subject of contention was in the Journal Times, not published by me, but in the Journal Times. Obviously, we used some of those photographs in my initial campaign internet reach, my website, my Facebook page. And I became aware that later the Hatch Act may apply to the photographs that I had posted. That came to my attention from Ms. Kelly Gallagher Dimler, who is, I believe, working on Mr. Binger's campaign. But she didn't notify me. She notified all of the chiefs and threatened them with repercussions from the Hatch Act. Now, interestingly enough, while I've been accused of not knowing the law and that I should know the law, none of the chiefs nor any of the attorneys for the different municipalities were familiar with the ins and outs of the Hatch Act either, at least that they made me aware of. So the Office of Special Counsel, who handles these matters, was contacted at the federal government and later rendered an opinion that, based on changes to the Hatch Act, which was a 1939 act, but changes were made in 2012, that it could impact federal funding to local law enforcement agencies. So I, as a measure of caution, removed the photographs. What I learned was that elected officials are not subject to the act, which means the sheriff, who supports me 100%, can still be in photographs as though he is endorsing me. But I can't use photographs of law enforcement officers in uniform as endorsements. So I took those pictures down. And in fact, in August, I ran into Ms. Gallagher Dimler at a Mount Pleasant board meeting and let her know that I appreciated her making me aware that this was a possible violation. And should she ever see anything in the future that gave her pause, I encouraged her to contact me. What she did instead was found a picture at the very bottom of my Instagram feed that I had forgotten was there. And I'll be honest, it was there, which took me all of 2 seconds to remove. Rather than contact me directly about that, in September, she decided to file a federal complaint with the Office of Special Counsel regarding that photograph. So here we are with this issue under investigation by the Office of Special Counsel. When I was contacted by the Journal Times and learned that they were aware of these complaints, I apologized. I think it was in the newspaper. I've been accused now of not taking responsibility. But my time for taking responsibility was then, and I made it clear. And now we move forward, and let's talk about the reality of what might happen here. And from the research I've done, no one's ever lost their federal funding over a photograph. No one's ever lost their job over a photograph. And that the goal of the Office of Special Counsel is to get people to be in compliance, which I did immediately. So I think it's a pretty, while I certainly will not say that nothing's going to happen, I think it's a pretty unlikely scenario that any of our local law enforcement agencies would lose their funding. And frankly, this whole thing is about politics, because if it wasn't, they would have called me and I would have fixed it. We didn't need to garner the attention of the federal government to remedy this problem. So I don't take responsibility for the complaint. I do take responsibility for posting the picture, and that I apologize for, and I've made amends with all of those in the picture. But this brouhaha that has ensued, you know, that is strictly a function of politics. And when you don't have anything to run on in terms of your community involvement and your experience, and you have to make up these other issues to divert attention away, and I think that's what's happening here.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with you. I think it's a tempest in a teapot, and I said so last week. You know, I would only say that the only disagreement I have with what you had just had to say is regarding the elective sheriffs. I know that the Hatch Act has a special dispensation for elected officials. But, you know, it's interesting because in 2008, there was a local sheriff who appeared at a event. It was a fundraising event for John McCain and Sarah Palin. That was a sheriff by the name of Mike Scott out of Lee County, Florida. And he was introduced as Sheriff Mike Scott, and he appeared in uniform. And the Office of Special Counsel determined that that, in fact, was a violation. Now, I'm assuming that he's an elected official, because most sheriffs are. But the issue was not that John McCain or Sarah Palin had violated the Hatch Act. It was Sheriff Mike Scott likely violated the Hatch Act. So, you know, when I hear all this stuff that you have violated the law, you know, I think initially there was a misunderstanding of the law. It was a mistake. But it was not only your misunderstanding of the law, but as you've pointed out, the people who actually violated the Hatch Act are the officers that appeared in uniform. I don't see where this is. I said we have a phone call, and I can only surmise what this might be about.
Good afternoon, caller. You're on the Cabranes Law Office. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for Ms. Hanson. Actually, I have two questions. I was listening last week when the Kenosha guy was on, and he said that Racine County doesn't use something called evidence-based practices, but he didn't explain that what that was. So I want to know what that is and why Racine doesn't use it.
Could you hear that?
I can. Good. Yeah, thank you.
Popping on headphones here.
Right. Evidence-based practices are really what we have now. The wave of the future that we use in any kind of treatment analysis, any kind of risk assessment analysis, anything we do in terms of dealing with people in the criminal justice system, the trend and the movement is toward evidence-based research so that we don't just try something, we measure what we do and make sure that the results do provide an adequate outcome. I take great issue with Mr. Binger's assertion that we don't use evidence-based treatment and programming in Racine County, and more importantly, that we don't do any kind of pretrial risk assessment, which we've done for, I'm going to guess, 10 years? I know it's more than five, but we do a pretrial risk screening on every person who is brought into the jail and comes to an initial appearance each day. So we've been, I frankly think, ahead of the curve on using evidence-based research. We use it every day in our treatment courts. We use evidence-based research in handling our juvenile delinquency cases as well as our CHIPS cases. And we use pretrial risk assessments that are evidence-based to try and help us make better decisions about what people need. That's what evidence-based research tells us.
Does that answer your question, caller?
It does, but I have one more question.
Okay.
Okay, so you talked about your treatment course, but I've been reading that this attorney from Kenosha says that we don't use something called Vivitrol, and that that'll change the way that we do treatment course. So why aren't we using that? What exactly is it?
Well, Vivitrol is a medical-based treatment for two things, for alcoholism and for opiate addiction. If you are taking Vivitrol, you can't get a high from either heroin or alcohol. So it just impedes your ability to use those drugs like you did before. Racine County has had a Vivitrol program for the last 3 years. It's part of our behavioral health services. It is available to any county resident who asks to be evaluated for it. But again, it is a medical-based treatment option. So you have to be approved by a physician who works at behavioral health services, and they prescribe it for you. It's really a shot you get once a month, and as long as you're not using other drugs, it takes away that craving that people who are addicted have.
Is it anything like an abuse? Because I remember that that used to be the treatment of choice. If you were taking an abuse and you were drinking, generally speaking, you become violently ill.
Vivitrol's different. It just blocks the way that you feel that high from alcohol and opiates. The danger of Vivitrol is if you're using and taking it, you can easily take too much because you don't know how high you are. So we have to be very careful. You can't just administer someone a shot and it's going to make them healthy or well. There has to be treatment that accompanies a Vivitrol shot so that you are already in progress towards making a recovery. Vivitrol is just a tool that we use to help you get there.
And speaking of treatment, my understanding is that just recently, in fact, you've started a marijuana treatment program through the courts and the district attorney's office. And my insiders tell me that originally the powers that be shot you down on that, and that you actually had to come in and you had to fight for that.
It took a little convincing. I'm not going to lie. It took some convincing, but generally I think I was able to convince people about how positive that outcome could be. The program is called TASC, so it's THC Alternative Solution Class. We started August 1st, and I believe the first group graduates this week. For first-time marijuana offenders, if you come into the court system now, you can be referred to TASC. And we like to say taking kids to TASC. But you take this 12-hour class, and rather than you get a conviction for marijuana and you end up with a fine that can be $600, $700, $800, we're going to send you to the Human Services Department where they put on this class, and it's an educational class that helps you make better decisions about whether or not you should continue to smoke marijuana.
Okay, caller, thanks. Thanks for calling in today. And our number here is 634-9756 or 634-WRJN.
So my purpose in starting the class is twofold. One, you know, very young people use marijuana because very young people try a lot of things, alcohol. You know, you experiment as you're growing. One conviction, though, stays with you forever. And my hope is that providing some education rather than a fine, we get these young people ready to go forward and make better decisions. So if you complete the class and you come back before the judge, and I have the support of both of our misdemeanor judges, we dismiss your case.
Well, you know, when you talk about one conviction stays with you forever, there are fairly substantial consequences to having a second charge involving marijuana, and what are those?
Sure. When you are a second-time offender in Wisconsin, you can be charged with possessing marijuana as a repeat drug offender, and that now makes it a Class I felony. So you can go to prison. Now, realistically, what we see every day in the court system is that's not the case, but it is a possibility, and it also gives you the possibility of a now felony conviction, which will make getting a job and seeing your future that much more difficult.
Yeah, hardly anybody, unless you have a pretty spectacular record, goes to prison for simple possession of marijuana. But, you know, as some of you out there may know, having a felony conviction does impede your opportunity to make a living and take care of your family, and that has a spiral effect on the community.
Absolutely, and so I'm hoping, one, that we can prevent that for some kids, but two, I'm hopeful that that education going forward also prevents kids from trying other drugs. You know, this is another effort that I'm making towards avoiding addiction to opiates, which is a crisis in our community and around the country. And no one I've ever come across who's using opiates, heroin, has said, well, I used heroin as my first drug. I think marijuana is very much a gateway drug. When that doesn't work the way you want it to, you try something else. So I would never be in favor of legalizing marijuana, but I'll tell you that from what I saw 21 years ago, the way we approach it has changed, and I think we need to change with the times as well.
And doesn't jump in here, this kind of jam up our court systems too, that are already full enough with kind of things that maybe aren't really that serious in the long run?
Absolutely. I just don't want to pass on the opportunity to provide this education if I can. When these kids do get arrested with these kinds of offenses.
Yeah, but, you know, as you know, Trish, it's not just kids. I mean, we get people in their 40s who are brought into the system. I know I've defended a number of them who, you know, just like to smoke weed.
And you know, and I say kids when I refer to my program, but I am willing to take anyone who I think could benefit from the education. But I will just tell you that I would say 95% of who I see is people under about 25.
Now, what do you do? What do you do for people who, you know, the program just started, and they've been smoking marijuana for years? What do you do for them?
Well, that's a different situation. If we have somebody who we think is addicted, not just a recreational user, then we need to talk about a different level of treatment. Somebody who's coming in as a first-time offender is what we call low risk, low need. In our treatment courts, we try to treat people who are high risk, high need. So I have options available. Just depends on what your level of need is.
But getting back to that low risk, low need, I mean, it's kind of like the person who gets picked up on an OWI first. It's highly unlikely that that person has just chose that particular moment to drink and drive drunk. Usually there's been some use of marijuana for some time before they get caught with the marijuana. So, you know, is it just because it's the first offense, because it's the first time into the system that they're considered low risk, or is it just age? What are the criteria, or have you already covered the criteria?
Well, at this point in time, we're just doing first time offenders, but as the program progresses, we're open to examining whether or not that should be expanded and perhaps have a second track of the class to deal with those folks who have been doing it for a long time and maybe want the help to change but can't do it on their own. But at this moment, I don't have that in place.
Sure. No, I understand. It's a new program.
Yeah.
All programs have to have room to grow.
Right.
Let me ask you this, because I asked this to Assistant District Attorney Binger, the first time he was on. Deferred prosecution agreements, Kenosha loves them, they use them. I think that they provide a great benefit to a large number of people. Racine never really has gotten into the use of deferred prosecution agreements. Why is that, and would you contemplate considering the use of deferred prosecution agreements?
Sure. I don't have a theoretical objection to the deferred prosecution agreements. However, someone has to monitor those folks while they're on the deferred prosecution agreement. So, historically, I guess in Kenosha, the assistant DAs do that there. They monitor their own cases.
Right. In Kenosha, what happens is they're mainly used for things like drug cases and domestic violence cases. In the domestic violence cases, they're required to pay a domestic violence fee. They're required to go to counseling. They're required to send a monthly letter to the district attorney's office telling them who their counselor is, when their last counseling appointment was, when their next counseling appointment is. And then at the end of, generally speaking, a year, they come back into court, and assuming that they've complied, that, you know, they haven't picked up any new charges, and they've complied with everything that they were supposed to comply with, usually at that point, the state either dismisses or reduces the charges. There is no other organization other than in Kenosha, it's Women and Children's Horizons that does the treatment program. But it certainly relieves the Department of Corrections because they're overburdened. We all know that. It relieves the Department of Corrections with the need to supervise these people. Generally speaking, if you can get into a deferred prosecution agreement, you cut down on the number of trials that you have, because now there's an incentive for the defendant to, you know, get out from under the burden of the charge. It's kind of a win-win situation in a lot of cases, and it's just been a non-starter in Racine.
Yeah,
for
and I can tell you exactly why. I have 18 lawyers. I have over 10,000 cases a year. And unlike a lot of other counties, I have 6 secretaries who provide all the backup support for us. So for me to say I'm going to start deferred prosecution agreements and keep track of them in addition to the 200 other files sitting on my shelves, that's just not realistic. So what I've done, in addition to making my rounds through the community campaigning, I've also decided to put together what I call a liaison committee, or a leadership advisory council, to the district attorney's office. And I've been speaking with different leaders from faith-based organizations, from nonprofit organizations, And what I'd like to see us do, because we can't do this alone, and the reality is there is no more money coming. You know, government is very lean, particularly in Racine County. So it's not like I can go to the county executive and say, fund my new idea for deferred prosecutions. But what I would like to see us do is model a system that we already use in the juvenile justice system here called community panels, where we have volunteers who do the monitoring. Make sure you go to counseling. Make sure you do your community service. And the response to this idea has been overwhelming, particularly from the faith-based community who wants to help.
And with that said, we're going to take a quick break here. This is the Cabranes Law Office, or Law Show, rather, on WRJN. Give us a call at 634-9756, 634-WRJN. If you'd like to contact Attorney Cabranes, give him a call at his office, 638-0529, 638-0529. We'll be back with more after news time. We've got Tom Karka with local news up next on WRJN.
Time now on WRJN for a sponsored conversation with Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Office in Racine. Attorney Cabranes is here to talk about and answer legal questions. For 20 years, Cabranes Law Office in Racine has specialized in traffic law, including OWIs, immigration, family law, and criminal defense issues. And now John Cabranes is here on WRJN to talk with you, our listeners. In a few moments, we'll be giving you the number if you'd like to call in.
This is the Cabranes Law Hour. Lou Turner in for Glenn Klein. This program is brought to you by Cabranes Law Offices, LLC. No attorney-client relationship is being created. This show is intended to provide legal information and not legal advice. The attorneys have neither the time nor the information during this show to fully review your particular legal issue. Be aware that in some cases, time limits may apply to the prosecution of your case, and you should seek legal assistance as soon as possible. Cabranes Law Office, LLC, makes no representation that the information provided today has specific application to your particular legal issue. With that friendly thing out of the way, let's get back to it. Attorney Cabranes and his guest, Deputy District Attorney for Racine County, Tricia Hansen. Attorney Cabranes.
Thank you. I have absolutely no idea where we left off, but you know, I just want to cover a couple of things that were discussed last week, and I think that you should have an opportunity to respond to. A lot was made last week over the fact that you don't try cases, or at least, if I remember correctly, and I've been corrected already once today, specifically that you haven't tried any cases in the last 2 years. The impression, I think, is one that that Assistant District Attorney Binger tries cases, which, by the way, that's what Assistant District Attorneys do. But
that is our job.
That is what the Assistant does. And that you, as a Deputy District Attorney, don't try cases. So how do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, it's just absolutely false. In the last 2 years, I tried the homicide of a 2-year-old child. Mom's boyfriend beat him to death. I also tried a case with a shooting of a stranger-involved shooting on Marquette Street. That was in the February of 2015. The other cases that I've tried since then, and it sort of surprises me that Attorney Binger isn't more aware of this, have been CHIPS and TPR cases. So children in need of protection and services and termination of parental rights. And those cases don't appear on the Circuit Court Access website because they're confidential. So the TPR cases, the two that I tried since then, and the one CHIPS case that I tried since then, really aren't going to show up anywhere that I can even, well, I can't talk about the cases, most importantly, because they are confidential. But anyone who's practiced in this area will know that a TPR case is about as involved as a homicide in criminal court. There's a lot of information to process. And in addition to these trials, and this is just over the last 2 years when 50% of my job has been as an administrator managing 30 people in the office, prior to that, I've been trying cases for 20 years, big cases, cases that have gone more than a week. The Diamond Head apartment fire, for example. I tried the Adriel White case. I tried cases that have gotten lots of media attention, complicated cases. Not guilty by mental disease or defect, cases that involve doctors and professionals and experts. And, you know, I could talk about the cases I've tried all day. Because, you know, I'm sure as you know, I've learned something every case I've tried. And I've tried dozens and dozens of cases. I tried to figure out how many And frankly, I just couldn't. Every time I thought about another one, I'm like, well, there's one more. So I've been doing trial work for, like I said, the last 21 years. And I don't back away from a trial. I think you can certainly confirm that my reputation in the legal community is that I'm not afraid to try a case. And I think I have, I don't want to say I have great trial skills, but I have the experience to have good trial skills. And like I just said, you'll learn something new every time.
I can attest to the fact that my first ever trial was against then Assistant District Attorney Trish Hansen, and we've had a number of cases together that should have resulted in trials, but the federal government stepped in on at least one of them took that away from us. But I've known Trish for 20 years, and I can tell you that. I've never gotten the impression that she's ever been afraid of trying a case, or that she doesn't know what she's doing once she does start trying a case. So, I think that was an unfair slam against you, Trish, and I'm not, I just want people who are listening to understand. Trish and I don't agree on a lot of things, and there are times when we have cases against each other, she just shrugs her shoulders and says whatever, and that's what it is.
I'm not that bad.
No, that's true. That's true.
My teenage daughter says whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So does mine.
Much, by the way.
Yeah, it's not like one of the other assistants in your office that who is known to use far more direct language when telling her what she thinks of my case. But in any event, but you talked about being an administrator and having that, one of the other issues that has come up not just once but twice now, it's a talking point, but it's the turnover, the very high turnover that you've had in your office over the last couple of years, I'm going to let you explain it. I will just say this. I've been practicing in Racine and Kenosha counties for 20 years. When I first started practicing in Kenosha County, they must have had a 400% turnover in a period of about 5 years. I mean, I would go to hearings on the same case 6 months apart, and I would have different attorneys every time. And then finally the trial would come, and then yet a fourth or fifth attorney would show up and do the trial. So from my perspective, and I don't know what the internals were, and I can tell you that in Kenosha, I suspect that there was some management issue in Kenosha when that happened. And I don't think that the management issues in Kenosha have necessarily resolved themselves, but that's a different issue. Why are you having such turnover in Racine?
You know, the problem, I can tell you that just to want everybody except for one who actually did retire from state service, everyone who's left has left because of financial reasons. A starting assistant district attorney makes approximately $50,000. When you come out of law school with $100,000 in loans, sometimes more, you come to the DA's office and you can get by. But what we're finding is that young attorneys coming out of law school tend to then get married. If you have kids, you can't afford the daycare and to work for that salary. So I think if you were to go back and ask the last 10 people why they left, they would tell you for financial reasons. In fact, I would say out of those 10 people, half of them have said to me personally, boy, I sure miss it. I wish I could make it work. And in fact, we've had some return very recently. The other thing that we've done is in order to avoid that gap that we had between very young lawyers right out of school and the experienced attorneys, is the last few hires were people that were working in the community as lawyers with a lot of experience under their belt as defense attorneys who have now come in to work for us. Antoinette Witch, for example, was a private bar attorney for many years. She now works at the DA's office. Dirk Jensen was a private attorney. He worked for us many years ago, left because his children were getting older. They needed to go to college. Now they're out of college. He's come back to state service. And in fact, starting next week, we have another very experienced attorney starting with us who's been in this community for over 15 years. Carolyn Delery.
Oh, really?
Nice. She's going to be working at the district attorney's office. So we appreciate and recognize that pay disparity. And the difficulty is that I have folks who have been working for us for 15 years, and they're at about 57 or 58. There's just not any more money coming down the pipe. It's not like I can say, hang on, it'll get better. And I certainly can't reward the attorneys at my office with more salary because it's not available to me.
You're listening to the Cabranes Law Hour on WRJN. You can give us a call at 634-9756, 634-WRJN. If you'd like to contact Attorney Cabranes in person, call his office at 638-0592.
So Carolyn Delery is coming to your office.
Wow. She is.
Just so that the people out there who are listening, Carolyn Delery is a long-time public defender, assistant public defender. Married to a public defender.
Retired public defender.
That's right.
That's what allowed her to make this decision.
Sure. Makes perfect sense. And, Carolyn, if you're listening, I'll forgive your treasonous behavior.
And Carolyn is someone that I reached out to because I do have these young lawyers that need mentoring, and she is perfect for that role. And so I appreciate the difficulty I have with compensation, but I want to overcome that by engaging these folks in the profession. It's become a career for me. I'm proud of that career. I'm proud of the work that I've done, and I'd like to see some of these other young people catch fire that way as well.
Well, in fact, we're talking about people leaving and coming back. You did that.
I did. At one point. I did. I left for a year and a half.
Yeah, I remember, and so you probably felt the call to make some money.
Well, yes, and some postpartum issues, I won't lie. It was right after I had my son, and I thought, if I'm working in private practice, I can be with him more. And the reality is that's not true. When you're in private practice, you have to work all the time because you have to be there when someone calls. And what I really found is that my level of personal satisfaction wasn't good. I wasn't satisfied with the work I was doing. So I can't be a good mom if I'm not happy with what I do all day, so I went back to the DA's office.
Now, here's a question I have not asked Attorney Binger. I'm going to ask you. I'm going to put you on the hot seat.
Okay. I'm ready.
I'm sure you are. there is a large percentage of people in the community that are racial minorities or ethnic minorities. There is nobody on the bench who is of an ethnic or racial minority. And there doesn't seem to be any prosecutors in your office that are of an ethnic or racial minority. And to me, that's always been a bad optic because a lot of the defendants that come through court are either Hispanic or black.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any plans of maybe doing an outreach and hiring some minority attorneys?
Every time we've posted an advertisement, we highlight on it Spanish speaker preferred because I understand how it looks, as you said, the perception. What I find is that bright young people of color, be that Hispanic or African American, the big law firms are looking for them too. And so when I offer $50,000, I can't recruit the kind of folks that I want to recruit. But do I have an eye towards that every time I have to fill a job? You bet. That is on my mind. Our last African-American lawyer was Bruce Geer, mm-hmm. who I think was probably there when you started.
Yeah, he was. He left in about 2000, I think.
Great guy. I still miss him personally and professionally. But we just don't have folks that even apply. I get a batch of resumes whenever we post a job, and I don't get people of color applying for the job. So I don't know if that takes me going to Marquette and recruiting or me going to UW and recruiting. It's something I'm going to have to explore.
Yeah, I think that to move away from the discussion of politics and of your election, I think a lot of what you're seeing in Charlotte, a lot of what you may see in Tulsa, a lot of what you saw in Milwaukee about a month and a half ago, are people who feel that the system doesn't look out for their interests, the system doesn't represent them, and when they go into a courtroom and they see a bunch of white faces looking at them, they feel
it's daunting.
Out.
It's daunting, and I I hope to do two things. One, the Leadership Advisory Council is going to be a diverse group of people to advise me about my community. I'm a part of the community. I think I understand the needs of the community, but it doesn't hurt to listen, and I'm here to listen. The second thing that I want to continue to promote is our community-oriented policing that I can't say enough about Chief Howell and the work that he's done. What I really think these issues break down to is trust. We have folks who don't trust police and police who don't trust the citizens. So we need to engage the community in building that trust, and I think those are some ways that we do that. If you've ever been to one of our community policing houses, or you haven't been, I would urge you to go. The officers working in those houses do amazing work, and every kid on the block knows their name, and every kid on the block knows they can come to them when they have a problem. And it's fostering that kind of relationships that I think we need to continue to work on, and I praise Chief Howell for that, as well as his plans and his initiative to start community policing officers in all of our schools, so that even if you don't live near a COP house, you're seeing an officer who becomes a friend or an ally to you in your school every day.
Great. Attorney Binger mentioned that as part of his tenure as district attorney in Racine, if he's elected, that he would get the DAs out in the community. Is that something that you're looking at, or do you think that there's a limited value to that? Or
I think it'd be a tremendous value, but it's probably never going to happen because I can barely cover the court appearances that we have to cover now. We're 8 attorneys short, according to the Legislative Audit Bureau. So some days I have trouble just being everywhere we're supposed to be. Do I think it's a good idea? Absolutely. Part of what I've done in our hiring process over the last 4 years is try to choose people who are local, who are invested, who are committed to being here and have an understanding of what's already happening out in the community. I would love to say, the only county in the entire state that has community-oriented prosecutors is Milwaukee, and they have over 140 lawyers. So realistically, can I make it happen? Probably not. Can I be supportive and encouraging of my young lawyers to get involved? Absolutely. And I want to try to make that time available for them. But I can't make it a part of their everyday job because we don't have the resources for that.
Sure. That's the state of Wisconsin and the monetary constraints that you have.
That's just the state of the world right now. There's never money to do what you want to do.
Well, I know that we're slowly but surely running out of time, and there is something that I do want to say to the listeners. Based on the tone of the conversation today, it should be pretty clear that I've known Trish Hansen for 20 years, and that I have a lot of respect for Trish Hansen. I can tell you now that in my house, she's got 2 votes for District Attorney of Racine County. And I would urge anybody who wants somebody who will work hard for our community, who I think, respects the law and will follow the law and will try to improve our community, I would ask you to consider voting for Trish Hansen. She has my endorsement. She, for what that's worth, most of you don't know who I am, so, that may or may not be of some value. But I will tell you, as somebody who has worked in this system for 20 years, who's gone nose to nose with her, she's a tough prosecutor, but she has always been fair. And, what you look for in a prosecutor, what I look for in a prosecutor, is somebody who's reasonable and fair. And I think those 2 adjectives can be fairly applied to Trish Hansen. So I urge you that when the election comes up, that you consider your voting for Trish Hansen. And that's, at the risk of alienating the other candidates, that's where I am today. I understand, Trish, that you're going to come back and join us on the 21st of October, correct?
I am.
And with any luck at all, we'll have Assistant District Attorney Binger here, and then you guys can scratch each other's eyes out.
Well, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate the support, and I appreciate you having me here today.
Well, I'm pleased to have you here, and You know, I'm winding up this show about 4 minutes too fast. So, but in any event, thank you for coming in. I hope you do well in your election, and you are welcome to come in and talk to us and about any issue that affects the community at any time that you want to come in. Just make the phone call, and you're more than welcome to join us.
Oh, and you can bet I'll be back.
Oh.
This has been the Cabranes Law Hour on WRJN. We'll come back and do it again next Friday at 1 o'clock, so make sure you join us then.
This has been a sponsored conversation with Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Office in Racine. Get your questions ready and tune in again next Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock for your chance to call in right here on your radio friend WRJN.